Hey, what's up? This is Maddie from Memphis May Fire, and this is Sonic Perspectives.
Am I alive or am I just breathing? I'm so numb that sometimes I fear it's all make-believe. Is it make-believe? I've been lost looking for a reason to carry on, but I'm losing hope. Is this all a dream? Tell me.
Thank you very much for taking the time to chat to me today. Really, really appreciate it.
Yeah, my pleasure, man. This is awesome.
Yeah, it's been something that I've been looking forward to a lot. You know, there's a lot of questions, and of course, like, you know, the album that's about to be dropped is pretty massive. You know, I've been privileged enough to, of course, have heard it in all its glory, and it is something of pretty epic proportions. So yeah, I can imagine just how stoked you guys must be to get it out as soon as possible.
Yeah, thank you so much, man. It feels really special. I mean, I won't dive in too much into the process or whatever, but I mean, we felt really confident in it and happy with it, and that's why we decided to just drop it a song at a time. You know, like, we wanted everyone to kind of experience it in a way where they were able to digest each song, kind of in the time frame in which it took to write each song. You know, about a month at a time, and so yeah, it's been a wild ride. It's been really cool.
It was actually one of my questions, just to kind of ask, you know, what the motivation was behind dropping it kind of intermittently. But I think that's really cool. And especially nowadays where people are kind of so used to getting stuff, or like all of it at once, kind of like Netflix series or something like that. It's kind of cool to almost have that, you know, that intermittent release of stuff. But that's awesome, man. And of course, you know, the whole album, it hits some pretty heavy topics. You know, you get toxic relationships, substance abuse, tons of other stuff. I mean, how did you approach writing this album compared to, you know, your previous works?
I think that, you know, like with our last couple albums, I almost had this guilt of, I'm such a hope enthusiast. I always want to be happy. I want to make the people around me happy, and I want to offer hope in all moments and everything that I do. And I think that with this record, I was like, I realized that the things that have offered me the most hope has not been somebody telling me that everything's going to be okay. It's always been somebody telling me, hey, this is what I'm going through, and realizing that I'm similar and that we're not alone in the things that we go through. And the whole album title, you know, it's called Remade in Misery. It's about being forged in the fire, the hardest moments in life being the things that make us who we are, the best versions of ourselves, and how we have to go through those things to become the best versions of ourselves. And so I wanted to be so honest in this record. I wanted to say, like, you know, if I am still in this season, or if I remember what it was like to be in this season where there was no hope and it felt so dark, it felt like a tunnel that would never end, then the song needs to be that way so that someone knows that someone else understands what that's like. So it doesn't have to be this, hey, I know you're hurting, but it's going to be okay. And there's nothing wrong with that. That's awesome. I love that. But it's more so something that somebody who's really in the thick of it can relate to and just realize that, you know, we're all human beings on the same playing field, and they're not alone in what they're going through. So
I think that's pretty relatable for the past couple of years as well with COVID. And of course, everyone's going through their own struggles and then struggling with the world as it is.
Yeah.
I can imagine that, you know, through this time and also just through your career, you've interacted with a lot of people whose hearts you've touched and who have probably said to you, you know, they're at their best because of you, and, you know, that you've kind of helped them when they're at their worst. I mean, how does that feel to you as, of course, you know, one of your core ethos is, you know, to write to fans. So how does that feel for you when you hear stuff like that, and how do you carry that with you?
It's the greatest honor of all time. I think that that's, you know, like so many bands hang up the towel at a certain point, and we've been going for 15 years, seven albums deep. And I think that's the driving force, is first and foremost, realizing that that type of interaction, speaking with someone who listens to your music and then telling you that something that you wrote had an impact on them, you will never be deserving of that. You could never put a price on that. You can't fathom that. It's almost like you hear it and it's such an honor, but it also doesn't sound real. But knowing that that person's heart or mind or situation might have changed because they heard something, something was said that they needed to say themselves that they couldn't say themselves until they heard a song, which has happened with me with music that I've listened to my whole life. It's like, that's the kind of thing that'll keep you going forever. You know, that's the kind of thing that will make you on the worst days get out of bed and write a song is for an interaction like that.
I can imagine. I think that's an incredible motivation to kind of get up and to know that you have the ability to reach out to so many people. Is, I think it's definitely a gift, and it's also a huge responsibility, which I think you tackle very gracefully.
Thank you. That's awesome.
No worries, man. So when did the actual writing process for Remade in Misery begin? When was the first song written?
So our band has always written the same way, where Kellen will like write an instrumental start to finish, and then he'll send it to me, and then I'll write vocals over it. So Kellen was writing for probably a year leading up to when the pandemic even started, and just kind of like compiling those in a Dropbox folder. And I think like probably 6 months into the pandemic is when I really started diving into writing. And you know, it wasn't long after that that we started kind of like recording as we were going, like here in my home studio is where we did all the vocals for the record. So I would write and then track and then write and then track and write and track, and it kind of went in that order. So I mean, it was the whole pandemic, the shutdown, the whole thing was our actual like writing recording time frame.
That's really cool. It sounds similar to the guys in Wage War, who kind of put themselves into a bit of a cabin kind of thing during lockdown. They just put the album together and they just released it. Everyone was like, whoa, like they were pretty angry.
Yeah. Cody's one of my best friends. I mean, he lives just right up the road. And we wrote together a lot on our record, and I wrote on one of the songs on the new Wage record. And that cabin that you're talking about, we've been to twice, and it's cool. An awesome place. Yeah.
Do you take your barbecues there?
Absolutely. Yeah. I bring them out there and we smoked up a bunch of jerky, and it's a great time, man.
That sounds amazing. I mean, there's worse ways to spend your time, that's for sure. So yeah, of course, you know, you lended your writing prowess for Yours Truly on Wage Wars record. How did Cody help the writing for Remade in Misery? Was it kind of a general help, or was it specific songs, or was it something in general?
So we were supposed to be able to travel to write. Kellen and I were going to fly all over the place to write this record with different people that we looked up to and respected a lot. And then once the pandemic hit, no one was traveling and everything was kind of, it was shut down. It was different than it's ever been before. And we've never done a lot of co-writing on previous albums, but we were going to try it. So when that happened, me and Cody, we hang out every single day. When we're home, we are together every day. Right. And so I love him so much and we think alike. And I was like, do you want to just sit down and make a record together, like vocally, like just bounce ideas off each other? And it was so beautiful how it worked out, because it was so natural. It was so easy. It was so simple to sit down and be like, what do you think about this? And I think that the biggest value that Cody brought to the band was, obviously he's extremely talented, but aside from that, Cody's a Memphis Mayfire fan. I mean, like he grew up listening to Memphis, and because of that, he has this perspective of what a Memphis Mayfire fan is like starving for. Now, like we are always, as a band, in whatever season of life we're in. So we go from album to album and tour to tour, and we, you know, absorb so much from everything around us, and we're writing and recording, and so much is happening. And so to talk to Cody and be like, you know, with this part, I think I'm going to go here. And we would go back and forth on his perspective of what a Memphis Mayfire fan would want to hear. And that was really fascinating. Sometimes perfectly aligned and sometimes wildly different than what I would have expected. And that was definitely the coolest thing of all time. I mean, it's the first time we've made a record where I've just felt like complete freedom of, I could express anything or be myself, because it was just me and him and we're so close. It's just me and him in this exact room, Cody sitting on that couch right here and me in this exact chair, just talking about, you know, this is the heart of this project. And I think this is what needs to be conveyed. It was amazing. So,
wow. I think once you kind of release the idea that you have something that's like expecting or from other people, or like, sorry, something is being expected of you. Once you kind of dismiss that, there's a lot of freedom to write what you like. And I think maybe to me, when I was listening to the record, there was just so much comfort. I don't know how to describe it, but there was so much comfort in what you were writing. And it was, I think that might be what you are kind of speaking about when you say that you're very proud of how mature the record sounds, because to me, it doesn't sound like, let's make a heavy record, let's make a soft or more palatable or more accessible record. It's more like, let's make the Memphis Mayfire record that we really want to make. So is that kind of how it felt as you were writing?
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, by the time we were even halfway through the record, we were like, we knew this is the greatest piece of work that we've ever put together. We knew this, there's something so special here. There's a lot of different elements throughout the record of things that we had touched on. We'd never thought that we would. And there's a lot of elements in the record that we rediscovered and kind of retouched on from when we had first started as a band. And the whole thing together, all inclusive, is just this kind of, it just works together so seamlessly of, I want to rediscover what it was like to be 19 and so angry. And I also want to take who I am now and go, and I want to talk to that person. I want to go and talk to 19 or 20 year old me and say, hey, I love that aggression. Let's bring that, but also don't forget everything that we've learned along the way. And that is, that's the record. That is what this album is. Yeah.
That's a pretty good visualization. I think that's exactly how it felt when I was listening to it. It was like, oh, this feels like all the way back to when I was a teenager. I was like, holy crap, this is some pretty heavy stuff. And then of course that, in the middle of the career, or even towards, I guess more recently, it was almost to the point where, well, you were getting on Billboard charts, and it was radio play. It was almost like, the mainstream rock world. It's like, okay, this is different, but hey, like I'll go for it. And then you come to this and you're like, oh, they're back to the heavy stuff.
It's been a wild ride, man. We're so happy with it. And we cannot wait to bring it to a live setting. Now that people know that it's a full album and all that, we've got a couple tours coming up that we're really excited about. So yeah, it's going to be cool.
Yeah, well, I mean, speaking of which, I believe it was September, you had the huge tour with Breaking Benjamin and Papa Roach. I mean, how was that?
Wild. Yeah, I mean, it was our first time playing arenas, which was like mind-blowing, especially like having gone through the pandemic, and you read all these comments, people being like, welcome to the new world, you're never going to tour again, and like all this stuff, and you're just like, gosh, like how discouraging is that to hear? Yeah. And then you end up playing the biggest shows of your career, like touring shows, and it was just like, it was mind-blowing. We felt so grateful to be there, and both those bands were phenomenal to tour with, like the greatest guys, and we had amazing times. I brought a grill out on the tour, and we held up a few days on the off days. It was so much fun, man. So yeah, that was an incredible experience. I hope that we get to tour with both those bands again.
And what was it like in terms of standing on the side of the stage while watching those bands that you most likely grew up listening to?
Bro, I mean, it's impossible to describe. I mean, I guess it as much as you would fantasize about that, it was that. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, I'm standing next to like Papa Roach's guitar case that says Papa Roach in big letters, and then like panning over with my phone, and then there they are. And Jacoby has become a close friend of mine over the last few years, and he's just so like, he is 10 times the front man that I'll ever be. And I mean, at his age, like when you watch them, Papa Roach is 100%. It's undeniable. They are at the top of their career right now. Everybody thinks that like, the big hit when they peaked and like all this stuff, it's like, that's not the case. That band is writing the best songs of their career, putting on the best live shows of their career, and in the best mindset of their career. I mean, they're phenomenal. And you could just, Jacoby stands on his platform while he's performing. You can just see, like, even from 20 feet away, like just gallons of sweat dripping off of him as he is like giving it his all every single night. And it's so inspiring to watch. They're an incredible band.
What do you think has been one of the tools that they've used to kind of, I don't want to say keep relevant, because it kind of sounds like then that they were once not, but I mean, obviously they've been around for such a long time. What do you think that they do that keeps them, as you said, like at the top of their career constantly, like even in 2022?
I mean, I think it's awesome that Last Resort was, you know, that it is this big iconic thing where it's at every emo night and, you know, DJs are remixing it and like other artists are like getting big off of that song. Like it's great that it is what it is. And it gave them a platform to go and be great because they should be there. They should always have this platform. But I think that they're really, they've always got their finger on the pulse. You know, like they're very attentive to what people are listening to, how they're reacting, what's going to happen live. It's, you can just tell that they are really with it as far as what people want in a live setting. And it translates so well to their albums. And I think every song that they've put out over the last few years and has just been like one on top of another, on top of another, on top of another. You're like, this can't get any better. And all of a sudden they put out another song and you're like, boom, crazy.
It's inspiring, you know. I mean, if they've got the energy to kind of keep going and doing what they want to do well into, you know, I think it's 20 plus years, even more so in their career now, it's like, well, I'm sure I could just get up and just live my normal life, you know. It's just a very motivational you know, way of thinking about it.
No doubt. Yeah.
Yeah. I may have misread this, but was Remote and Misery the first album that has essentially been produced within the band? So it's just all the members of the band writing it and producing it together?
First ever, yep. So Kellen, this is the first record that we've ever put out that Kellen produced. He's always had really polished demos that he's presented to the band that we've written with, but then we've always gone and recorded with somebody else. And this is the first time that he has produced and mixed and mastered a Memphis Mayfire record. Yeah, so he did it all. And just did an amazing job. We've always kind of known that it was going to get to that point, and we've been waiting for the right time. And I think the pandemic gave him the opportunity to grow in his own craft, and he really stepped up to the plate and nailed it. Yeah,
that's really cool. And is there a piece of equipment or some kind of feature in the studio that you guys used that you haven't used before that you really loved? Like I saw that you were using the Telefunken mic for the vocal track.
Yeah, I mean, I'm sure Kellen could talk to like endless amounts of gear that he used that was all new. But yeah, I mean, I built out my vocal booth over the pandemic and I used two different Telefunken mics on the record. I used the AK-47 and the TF-11. And yeah, I kind of mounted them side by side and would bounce back and forth for, you know, mains or BGVs or whatever. And that was super cool. But yeah, I mean, it's definitely, I mean, it was a whole experience. The whole record was tons of new everything. Yeah. So I think Kellen would be the right person to ask about all the different gear, and he's got his own like tone package that he uses, and it's really cool. Yeah.
That's amazing. I think it'd be something special because, of course, you know, it's always good to have outside opinions and outside influences when it comes to, you know, having someone else write for you or produce for you. But yeah, to have it, you know, within your own band, within your own core could be, I guess it's the word, it's a very, almost like a natural kind of development of the tracks in a way.
But, and I mean, we sent out one song for test mixes before Kellen had agreed to mix the record, and we realized, I mean, like the guys that we sent out to, I mean, were phenomenal, and we realized after getting it back that this record was so sonically complicated that Kellen was really the only person that could have done it. And moving forward, I think that it will be the same way. It's like there's so many layers. Kellen's so brilliant with the way that he produces that if you really were able to jump into a session and dissect every single tiny sound, it's almost like you send that off to anybody and they're just lost in it. You know, I think he was the only one that could have made this record what it is. And it would have turned out something that it shouldn't have been if we had someone else mix it. So
cool. All right, and now two songs related to the record. Did you leave any songs out of the record that you did create?
Yeah. Yeah, there's a handful of instrumentals and kind of ideas and things like that we had gone over. It might be used eventually, really cool stuff, but just songs that didn't feel like they fit the overall tone of this album. Yeah,
sure. Well, that's, yeah, I can imagine people be asking for that. They'll be like, no, please, if we don't care what it sounds like, just send it to us, please.
Yeah. I mean, who knows? I mean, maybe a B-side or something.
Yeah, B-sides. And then the second question is, it's probably like asking you what your favorite kid is, but is there a song that you love the most off this album?
I think that they all have their own individual thing, which is like such the most generic answer that you could ever give to that question. But I mean, there was like big risks on the record, you know, like Death Inside and Misery, which people haven't heard yet. You've heard it, right?
Yes.
You know, like I explored a new tone with my voice, a new style with my voice that I had never done before. That was a risk that I was excited about. I think it turned out really cool. Somebody was the very first song that we wrote on the record, and it felt so special from the jump. I mean, it felt like something that by the time we were done, we were like, I didn't know that we could make that song, you know? Yeah. And once it was done, I was like, I am so just proud of us for making that song. It's something that Memphis Mayfire fans don't expect. And it was something that we didn't expect. And it turned out really cool. I think Make Believe has its own, like has a life of its own. That song hasn't even really been serviced to radio yet, but I think when it does, I think it'll make a pretty big wave. I feel like that's such a special, it's something that I have not heard before. And it feels, it feels like an individual little like thing of its own. And so, I guess there's a handful of them. But I think we're excited to explore what Memphis Mayfire really is with this record, in a way that wouldn't make our fans feel like we have abandoned them. And it feels like we did that. So
I think it's, I was quite surprised to hear that, Somebody was the first track that you ended up writing for this album. I thought it would have been something like The American Dream, to be honest. But that in itself is impressive. It shows to me that you're already keen on branching out, not sticking to the same, you know, formula and just going for it. So that's amazing. And then of course, with your vocals, just doing something completely different. I mean, it must be not scary, but of course you want to navigate different tones and different approaches to vocals. But I mean, what was that like for you? Did you kind of try a bunch of things and you were like, no, it's not nice, let's not do that? Or is it kind of just, let's just see what happens and just kind of go for it?
It's definitely always, it's always trial and error. I mean, I can't even count the number of times that, you know, like I'd be in the booth and just like go for it and it would just be hilarious. Like, oh, that's not right. And then you have other moments where you do something and you're like, oh, whoa, that feels really special. That feels like something that we need to hold on to. So yeah, there's a ton of that. And side note, The American Dream is actually the last song that we wrote for the record.
Oh, no way.
Yeah, the very last one.
Crazy. Oh, bloody double surprised on that one. And were there any vocal influences that you kind of looked at when you were looking at navigating your voice in different shapes and ways?
I think that I'm maybe just like naturally influenced by, you know, a product of my environment, the way that people are. I don't know. Sure. But no, nothing more than anything. It was like, there was something I wanted to say. And every time you have something to say, there's always a right way to say it. And sometimes you'll land on something and you'll be like, oh, well that feels good. And then other times you'll land on something, you're like, man, that feels great. Yeah. That feels like exactly how that lyric was meant to be said or sung or screamed or spoken or whatever it is. And that's in those moments you feel like you've discovered something new, like a treasure. You're like, oh my gosh, you know, this thing just came out of me and I didn't even realize that it was in me. So yeah.
Awesome, man. Look, I think people are going to be so excited for the whole album when it drops. And I can't wait for people to actually hear it. You know, they've of course heard a bunch of songs so far, but to have the whole body of work in front of them, I think it's going to be a truly special experience. So
awesome.
I have one more question for you and then I'll let you go. What are some upcoming metalcore bands that you have heard recently, or what's an album that you're currently jamming at the moment?
Yeah, totally. I don't know about upcoming. I don't know if I'd be the best to answer that question. I mean, I think the new Bad Omens record is amazing. Mm-hmm. They're definitely about to have a big moment. That band is so cool. Rain City Drive, that band's really exciting, I think. I'm on the spot here.
Sorry.
I mean, you know, Waged War is not very old. Obviously, Cody's one of my best friends. You know, they're like a new ish band. I think they're so exciting and so fun, mm-hmm. and just an awesome band all around. So talented, every single one of those guys. I don't know.
It is a tough question.
It's tough. I mean, I hear a lot of stuff all the time and I'm just like, whoa, that's sick. you know, then you're on the spot and you're like, I don't remember. But yeah, I mean, the bands I said, definitely I stand by. I think they're awesome. You know, Fire from the Gods, those guys, I mean, I love them. Cool. I love their music. I think they're going to make huge waves.
Of course, they appeared on Remain in Misery as well.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. AJ from Fire, he's in one of the songs. He's the only guest vocals on the record and killed it. Sounds so good.
He did kill it. It was pretty incredible. It's like, whoa.
Yeah, man, I think there's probably 20 bands that I'm super stoked about that I have, you know, I haven't mentioned, but a lot of bands out there doing awesome stuff. I think that's the greatest thing about the pandemic was like so much great music came out of it, you know, like not that there can be something good about something so bad, but it was, you know, there has to be a silver lining and time for people to be quiet and reflect and hone in on their craft. I think is the silver lining of what we all went through. So.
Sounds like a pretty perfect way to tie up this interview. Thank you. Thank you so much for your time. It's, you know, it's been awesome to kind of gain more insight into Remade of Misery and of course, you know, the writing process and the circumstances in which all the songs were born and developed. But yeah, I think, as I said, a lot of people are going to be super excited and yeah, I wish you all the best with it. Yeah, Remade of Misery dropping June 6th, I believe, via Rise Records.
Is it June 3rd, June 6th? I don't know.
Start of June. Be excited. It's really close.
Yeah.
Cool. Thank you so much for your time, man. And yeah, take care.
Hey, thank you for having me. It was an honor.